Maine's new Climate Council. Governor Janet Mills this afternoon addresses the United Nations General Assembly. She'll talk about her commitment to reducing Maine's greenhouse gas emissions by 45% by the year 2030 and 80% by 2050. To make it happen, the governor has created a new Climate Council. It's big and varied, with more than three dozen members from government, science, business, environmental groups, and more. Its first meeting this Thursday. I'm Jennifer Rooks. How will Maine meet these ambitious goals? What will the Climate Council focus on? How will the state pay for it? We'd love to hear your ideas. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. This week marks the start of Maine's new Climate Council, a statewide group focused on addressing climate change. Today, we'll learn about their goals and strategies. Today's show is part of a week-long reporting project, Covering Climate Now, by Maine Public and more than 250 other news outlets around the world. The series coincides with the United Nations Climate Action Summit being held today in New York. Joining me in the studio, Commissioner Jerry Reed. He leads Maine's Department of Environmental Protection, and he is co-chair of the Maine Climate Council. And Dan Burgess, he is director of the Governor's Energy Office for the state of Maine and a member of the Maine Climate Council from the executive branch. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about how the state plans to take action on climate change? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you both for joining us here today. I know an exciting day for you all as Governor Mills prepares to address the UN. And we were hoping to hear from her, but apparently she's kind of busy right now, and are hoping to hear from Hannah Pingree, who is in New York with her. Jerry, why don't I start with you? Climate Council meets first. More than 36 people, 36 and counting is what I understand. On Thursday, a really big group of people. Is this the kind of council that's going to sit around and talk for a while before anything happens?
Yeah, absolutely not. And that's one of our points of emphasis. We want to be very action oriented with the council. And the size of the council is notable, but there's a good reason for that. The point of this exercise is to create a forum where a group of people with very different backgrounds and experiences can get together in a public setting and have a conversation about what strategies we in Maine need to develop to respond to the challenges of climate change. So it's necessary to have a significant membership as a result of that. We've got the Maine Lobstermen's Association, the Maine Forest Products Council. We've got tribal leader representation. We've got AARP. We've got every conceivable interest and perspective represented on this council.
What are some of the first steps?
Well, as you noted, the first step is going to be to have the kickoff meeting on Thursday. That's a big deal. The keynote speaker will be Gina McCarthy, who is the former administrator of EPA under President Obama. She's a very dynamic speaker. And that's going to be kind of an orientation session for the council and the working groups that serve under it to kind of set our mission, get a common understanding about what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And after that, we will be having the working groups that devote themselves to individual subjects under the climate change umbrella start meeting on a monthly basis to really get to work in earnest.
All right. Well, Dan, you're the energy guy. What can we expect to see? I know many people have been frustrated by what's happened in recent years as far as solar energy rebates drying up, slowing of wind power development. Are we going to see a quick change on those fronts?
Yeah, I think that is definitely going to be on the agenda for what the Climate Council takes up. There are going to be six or seven different working groups, and one of them will be focused on energy. And I think it's important to note that Maine has already made really significant progress under the governor's leadership and working with the legislature. We've not only passed this legislation, which requires emissions reductions 45% by 2030, and 80% by 2050. But we've also passed legislation around increasing our renewable portfolio standard, which is the most ambitious in the country right now.
Well, let me ask you about these ambitious goals, because 45% by 2030, that's 45% in 10 years, and 80% by 2050. How realistic are they?
We think they're ambitious, but appropriately ambitious given the challenges that come with climate change and the results that we're seeing right now. And I think, you know, we are poised to see on the renewable side real development. Our current RPS is at 40%, and we're going to double that in 10 years, and we think it's doable. And the Climate Council Working Group will be working to identify opportunities to make sure that happens, but also to make sure that we're keeping electricity prices in check and that we're moving forward in a sustainable way.
Our current RPS is at 40%. What's RPS?
Renewable Portfolio Standard. So the amount of electricity that has to be provided by electricity providers is currently at 40%, and we're going to double that in 10 years.
So I'm going to digress just a little bit, because I find this really interesting. When you're looking at your renewable portfolio, it's basically where people's electricity is coming from. And this is interesting, because there's been a lot of talk around the country and around the world about coal. Coal is really not a very big part of our energy mix here in Maine, is it? That when you're turning on a light, where is that electricity coming from?
So as you know, we share a grid with our New England states and neighbors, and so we are getting electricity from across that grid, and it's managed by ISO New England. You can actually look on your phone right now if you download the ISO New England app and see that where your electricity is coming from. Right now, we're getting less than 1% of our electricity from coal, less than 1% from oil. And so we've seen a real rapid transformation in that transition.
And the two big sources right now for New England are natural gas and hydropower. Where is the hydropower coming from? We don't have a Grand Coulee Dam here in Maine.
Right, that's right. So the hydro is coming from smaller resources across the state. There are some imports already coming in from New York and Canada as well. But we're seeing that a lot of that generation happen in-state.
So it's really the accumulation of the power generation from, say, the paper mills and things like that around Maine.
That's definitely,
state.
Yeah. Definitely a part of it.
Okay, so I want to go back to the big picture a little bit. Now, what's the timetable, Jerry? What are we looking at?
Well, the council itself is permanent. It's set forth in statute, and that's important. We wanted something that was going to endure through different changes in administration. But for the first year, the council itself will plan to meet four times. And as I said, the working groups devoted to the subject areas like energy, transportation, coastal and marine issues, they will meet monthly and then report back to the council itself with their recommendations through the year. By the end of 2020, we will be presenting an updated climate action plan for the state of Maine, and we'll be prepared to come back in January of 2021 with recommendations for the legislature that emerged from the process.
All right. I was talking with Dan about the generation of electricity, but a really big use of fossil fuel in Maine is heating homes. My understanding, something like 3/4 of Maine homes heat with oil. How do we change that? It costs a lot of money to put in a new heating system.
Right. So one of the things that we would expect the working groups to focus on is how to make heating pumps more widely available and accessible to people. The idea is to electrify both the transportation sector and the heating sector to the extent that we can. And heating pumps is going to be a big part of that answer. As you noted, when you look at the kind of the portfolio of emissions from Maine, it's unique in the sense that transportation and residential uses make up a disproportionate amount of the emissions as compared to other states. And so that's going to have to be a point of focus for those working groups, as to how to wring emission reductions out of those sectors.
When you say the electrification of transportation, you're talking about people getting more electric cars. We're not talking about trains all over Maine.
That's right. I mean, there's a role for public transportation, but Maine is different than Rhode Island, Connecticut, Massachusetts, places where the population is more dense and less spread out in a rural landscape as we have here in Maine. So public transportation isn't necessarily going to be cost effective in much of our landscape. So we have to turn to ways of electrifying transportation through the use of electric vehicles and electrifying the I-95 corridor, for example, to put into place the infrastructure that will support the use of electric vehicles. We can incentivize the use of electric vehicles through rebate programs, and we're already doing that through the use of some of the Volkswagen settlement funds and in other ways. So you're exactly right. In Maine, a big challenge will be how to bring about that transition from internal combustion engine transportation to electric vehicle transportation as quickly as we can.
Joining us on the line now is Kathy Mills. She is a research scientist with the Gulf of Maine Research Institute and a member of the Maine Climate Council's Climate and Marine Working Group. She authored the Northeast chapter of the National Climate Assessment. Thanks for calling in, Kathy.
Thank you for having me.
Kathy, we keep hearing really dire predictions about climate change reaching the point of no return. In the work that you did on the National Climate Assessment, what is your thinking about that sort of dire prediction, and where are the areas where we really can make a difference in putting the brakes on climate change?
Well, I think we just heard a lot of good conversation around the ways in which Maine, as well as other parts of the country, can be proactive on reducing emissions. And I think Maine is really stepping out as a leader in this space, and the work of the Climate Council will be really valuable for moving this even further forward. So I think that reducing emissions is a key component of sort of turning that dial. I also think, though, it's important to recognize that some of the effects of past and ongoing emissions are already really baked into the system. And I'm really looking forward to working with this group to think about how Maine can step out as a leader in that space as well, in terms of planning for how we can effectively respond to some of the changes that are coming that are already sort of baked in, and in that way also be a role model for other regions to move forward with adaptation and resilience planning as well. So I think there are a couple of different dials that can be turned, and that this group will play a role in shaping both of those.
Sure. And just Friday on Maine Calling, we discussed sea level rise being one of those you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you the question this way, though, Kathy. I mean, this is a small state. There are many billion people on this planet. Maine has 1.3 million of them. What kind of difference will Maine actually make by reducing our carbon footprint?
Well, I think that in the grand scheme of things, the contribution of any individual or any particular place is inherently, you know, just a small part of the true challenge. So this does have to be an effort that is built up from many different angles. And I think that that doesn't undermine the importance of individual action or the action of one state. All of those contributions move us in the right direction. But I think that this also does the shift toward through those individual contributions and through states like Maine really pushing toward what we can do at a statewide level. It does shape the policy dialogue as you have more people trying to contribute to the good of the whole. It, I think, brings more to bear upon a policy conversation that needs to play out at a national as well as international scale.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. That's Kathy Mills. She's a member of the Maine Climate Council and a scientist with the Gulf of Maine Research Institute. Dan, as you all know, our former governor resisted some changes in especially things like solar and wind because he was worried about the price of energy in Maine, feeling as though Maine and New England are not competitive in the business and for many businesses because of the cost of energy here. How does one expand our renewable energy portfolio without making electricity even more expensive?
So I think we do it by being very thoughtful and with real intention, with that in the back of our mind that we need to make sure that electricity prices are as competitive as possible and that we're not having negative impacts on Mainers. And we've built in a number of different cost provisions, cost containment provisions in the renewable portfolio standard bill that passed. And we're looking for that to set the direction of where we're going. But there are different times to be able to check in and report on progress to see how we're doing and make sure that we're not driving costs up. And we think that the other side of that coin is that the development of renewable energy and those technologies bring big economic opportunity to the state of Maine by bringing new jobs, people to install these technologies, people weatherizing homes. We think this is a great opportunity for the state.
All right. We'll go to a tweet from Nissa. She writes, I would like to know what the Climate Council is planning on doing to support small businesses who want to go green and what resources are out there already. I know Efficiency Maine has a lot of great resources for individuals, but there isn't much for businesses.
Well, it's a good question. We have specific representation from small businesses on the council. I think it's Dan Kleben from Maine Beer Company in Freeport, who's very energized about climate change issues. So that'll be something we're going to take a hard look at. But it's going to be the same sort of things that I think individuals would be looking at in terms of reducing their carbon footprint, changing the way you get around, looking at energy conservation in the building where you work, reducing your carbon footprint through the materials that you use. All those sorts of things are relevant to this.
All right, go ahead.
And I think it's just worth pointing out that there are incentives available for businesses through Efficiency Maine Trust, and I'd encourage folks to look online there. And, you know, there may be happy to talk to the caller offline if there's ways that aren't being met. But we think Efficiency Maine Trust is doing great work for residents and businesses across the state.
Go to David on Facebook. He says, the biggest barrier to clean energy for most homes and businesses is the upfront cost. I helped represent Representative Ziegler introduce LD 1634, which would create a statewide green bank to improve funding options for clean energy projects. The Connecticut Green Bank has funded over $1 billion in clean energy projects in the last 8 years by leveraging public funds 7-to-1 with private capital. Is that the kind of thing you all are looking at for Maine?
We think project financing and financing will be part of the discussion of what's being discussed. I should note that, you know, with some of the legislative achievements that that happened this last session, we're going to be seeing a number of new programs roll out that incentivize solar, that incentivize different types of renewable energy that we think will help reduce the barrier to costs and the barrier to install. And we're seeing projects already begin to start to come to fruition because of that.
When will people be able to see these? If I'm listening to this program and I'm thinking about putting solar panels on my house, when should I start applying?
Right. So we're the Public Utilities Commission is currently going through their rulemaking on these different different programs, and we expect to see progress on that in the coming months. So stay tuned for next year, early to mid next year.
All right. Well, we're talking about Maine's brand new Climate Council. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Maine Community Foundation, where you can create your own charitable fund to benefit Maine. Learn more at mainecf.org.
On the next Fresh Air, Terry talks with Tegan and Sarah, twins, singer-songwriters, and LGBTQ icons. They have a new memoir about their tumultuous high school years in the mid-90s, and they have a new CD. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 here on Maine Public Radio. Starting at 4:30 each weekday evening, Maine Public Television brings you 3.5 hours of in-depth, quality public affairs programming. First, at 4:30 each afternoon, it's Amanpour and Company, delving into the top issues of the day. Followed by The Journal from Deutsche Welle at 5:30, with an international and European focus on world events and issues. Next comes the BBC World News at 6, then the Nightly Business Report at 6:30, and finally the PBS NewsHour at 7. 4:30 to 8 each weekday evening, news you can trust on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we're learning about the Maine Climate Council and its plans to take statewide action on climate change. Joining me are two of the key people on the State Climate Council, Dan Burgess, Director of the State Energy Office, and Jerry Reed, Commissioner of Maine's Department of Environmental Protection. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Joining us now is Susie Arnold, a marine scientist with the Island Institute. She's a member of the Climate Council's Scientific and Technical Subcommittee. Thanks for calling in, Susie.
Thank you.
What are some of the particular climate change impacts on Maine islands that you're focusing on?
Right. Well, that's a great question. So if you think about coastal Maine, we actually have twice the national average of workers that get their jobs in resource extraction industries. So think fishing and farming. And as we all know, these are critically impacted by climate change. So for Maine communities, it really there's a lot of economic motivation for mitigation and adaptation. So if you think about the lobster fishery, brought in over $484 million to the state last year, over $1.5 billion to the economy in total, and 10,000 jobs. So if you think about what we can do to help the lobster fishery, limiting warming to keep water temperatures within the Gulf of Maine, within the thermal tolerance for lobsters, that makes a lot of economic sense.
What message do you have for Maine residents about what the state is trying to accomplish through the Climate Council?
Well, I would liken it to a much smaller effort that happened in 2014, which was the Ocean Acidification Commission. And what that did for the state back in 2015 was turned on the headlights through its report to the state about the risks posed by ocean acidification. And it outlined some really concrete mitigation, adaptation, and education goals. So my hopes for the council is that this will be a real holistic look at climate change facing our state, both on land and in the water, and we can take a big picture systems approach to tackling the problem.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. That's Susie Arnold, one of the members of the Climate Council and a marine scientist with the Island Institute. We're going to go to Marty Groman, who's calling in. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you? Hi, Dan. Hi, Jerry.
I'm great. Hi. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I'm the executive director of E2Tech. We promote Maine businesses in the environmental and clean tech renewable energy sector. We're holding a legislative wrap-up forum on Wednesday morning. Actually, Director Burgess will be a featured speaker. And we're just getting intense interest. I think it echoes a lot of what you've been saying on the program, what Kathy Mills said, for example. People from all over the country are registering. They're calling and basically saying, Maine is the place to be to work in this area. And it's pretty exciting.
Marty, thanks for joining us. Nice to hear from you. We're going to go to Kim on Facebook. She writes, does the council include a representative from each of Maine's political parties? I ask because there are distinct philosophical differences in how taxes and other funding sources will finance the cost for climate improvements between Republicans, Democrats, and Greens. Is there a member of the Green Party represented on the council?
Yeah, it's a really good question. There's not a member specifically designated from the Green Party, but there are certainly Republican and Democrat legislative representatives on the council, and that's by design. This was definitely not something that was intended to be kind of an echo chamber where a group of people who see the world exactly the same way get together and kind of congratulate themselves on having it all figured out. It was very intentionally set up to have a diverse membership where people from very different perspectives would get together and work these things out. And I think that will pay dividends on the back end, because when it comes time to implement the recommendations and strategies that come out of the process, all these different players and stakeholders will have already touched it and had input on it. And I think there will be more buy-in, and I think it'll be easier to do the implementation at the end of the process.
We'll go to Julia, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Julia. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I just wanted to quickly touch base back on the energy topic as far as renewable energy and the sourcing it. Actually, everybody has the choice right now. If you go to Maine Green Power, my mom is an outreach coordinator for them. You can be an individual, small business, or a large business in Maine. You can choose to buy certain blocks of power, just like a standard offer. Don't quote me on this exactly, but I believe you can actually buy a portion of your power bill from that. It will cost you a little bit more, but I mean, when you're looking at maybe $5 to $15 a month, you know, for a small amount of usage, what's that really mean if your carbon footprint is going to be diminished?
Okay, Julia, thank you for calling and telling us about Maine Green Power. Dan, is this one of the options when you're choosing your...
Yeah, so the their Mainers do have the choice to choose a competitive electric supplier. There are a number of options out there. I would encourage folks to make sure that they're shopping around and ensuring that they know exactly what they're signing up for. Some of these perks do cost a little bit more, but some, I think, folks are willing to do that for clean energy.
All right, Julia, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Lynn, who's calling from Sanford. Hi, Lynn. Go ahead. Lynn, go ahead. Lynn, are you there? Okay, well, yes? Hopefully she'll call back. This is an email from Stephen at AutoWorks. What can one individual do to make a meaningful difference? I'm a small business owner, founder who has become accustomed and been required to act decisively and at times without regard to the bottom line in order to assure that the business survives and thrives. For decades, I've also worked as a volunteer on local municipal energy committees that have been frustrated by the glacial pace of change in municipalities whose sole focus is understandably on the cost to taxpayers while putting a low priority on climate issues. Are there volunteer positions in Maine government for passionate and knowledgeable individuals who would get satisfaction from, quote, getting things done that would make a significant impact? I'm about to work with Megan Collins at the UMO Composites Lab on engaging middle and high schools around the state to participate in the 2020 Windstorm Challenge, but feel even more needs to be done.
Feels like a He's already doing quite a bit, and I think it's a good example of how Mainers can get involved in their local community, take action, participate in your municipal volunteer committees, or being involved in that way, because there's real opportunity for change to happen at the local level, but also, I think, engage through public hearings through the Climate Council.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, you know, if somebody is willing to make the plunge and buy an electric vehicle today, you immediately become kind of an ambassador for the cause, because people are very interested in it, and you'll find yourself answering a lot of questions about it. And so if he's looking for a concrete way as a small business owner to take the plunge and act decisively, one way to do that would be to buy an electric vehicle, put your logo on the side, and you'll immediately find yourself talking about these issues on a daily basis.
Guess what, everybody? We have Hannah. Hannah Pingree is co-chair of the Maine Climate Council, director of the Governor's Office of Policy Innovation and the Future, and is with Governor Janet Mills at the UN Climate Action Summit in New York today. Hi, Hannah. Thanks for calling in the midst of all the excitement.
Yes, thank you. It's hot down here in New York, but obviously it's an exciting day, I think, for Maine.
So how's it going? What's been happening so far?
So, I mean, the governor was invited to attend the entire UN Climate Action Summit today. It's a day where, really starting at 10 a.m., it kicked off with a panel of youth climate activists, including the amazing woman from Sweden who we've all read so much about. The governor is, I am not in the main hall with her where she's speaking, but she's in there for the day. She's speaking a little after 3 o'clock. And the whole day is just world leaders and other important invited guests, and they all are, you know, making announcements about what their state or mostly what their country is going to do to step it up to meet the Paris climate commitments, and what more could they do sort of in the face of what we know is a significant global challenge.
Hannah, I know that you're co-chair with Jerry of the Maine Climate Council. What are your hopes for what the Climate Council can realistically achieve in Maine?
Well, I don't want to repeat. I wasn't able to listen in on what Jerry and Dan have already told you. So hopefully, Jerry, I'm sure, has covered it. But obviously, we have an ambitious task, and that is our goal and our task is to figure out how to update the state's climate action plan. To figure out how to meet the state's targets. And our first target is a 45% reduction in greenhouse gases by 2030, and figure out how to prepare our communities, our industries, and our people for some of the changes we know are coming because of climate change. So a focus on adaptation and resilience. So it's an incredibly tall order in many ways. I think because of that, hopefully Jerry described the working group structure the state is setting up, but we are trying to bring in lots of voices, lots of key stakeholders, and then get to work. I mean, the goal is not to talk and have a lot of, you know, never-ending meetings, but to come up with a plan by next year and figure out how to implement it. So it's heavy lifting. We know that Maine's transportation sector is driving a lot of our carbon emissions at this point. We've done some great work in energy. Dan is helping Les lead the way in doing even more work. But issues like transportation planning, you know, how do we reduce greenhouse gas emissions in that sector? And how do we help communities plan? I live on an offshore island, and I think as many people know, the coast and the islands really are facing some challenges in terms of sea level rise, ocean acidification, changes in our fisheries. So being proactive about that planning and what the state's role is in it, and then also, you know, how do we pay for some of the challenges we know that towns are facing? You know, we have towns already needing to move sewer treatment plants that are at sea level. I live right next to Vinyl Haven. They're trying to figure out at some point the Main Street will be flooded. So these are important issues to communities and people in Maine, and to be proactive about how we plan and how we change is essential.
Well, Hannah, thanks so much for calling in. Hannah Pingree is with Governor Mills at the UN Climate Action Summit in New York and is co-chair of the Maine Climate Council. Also calling in right now, Anya Wright, she is the youth member of the Maine Climate Council and is a senior at College of the Atlantic. Thanks for calling in, Anya.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I think a lot of people saw Greta Thunberg's speech this morning, and she sensed the real sense of frustration among young people about climate change. Would you say that she accurately represents your generation's feeling, or is there hope for change?
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of desperation among youth right now to really get action happening. And as she said this morning, very eloquently and passionately, that the eyes of all future generations are upon you. And if you fail us, we will never forgive you, because we won't have a future and there won't be future generations to come. So, yeah, I definitely think that she represents the youth voice well.
What role do you hope to serve as member of the Climate Council? How do you hope your voice will make a difference?
So I hope to bring as many voices to the table as possible from the youth perspective. I recognize that I am a youth, but I only represent one perspective. I'm a college-educated woman from Southern Maine, and there are many different perspectives from all over Maine that I think are important, and from all over the world that I think are important and necessary when we're talking about these issues. And I also recognize that as I'll be representing my entire generation and generations to come, I hope to act as a constant reminder of the gravity of the situation we're in. And I think, like, there are many other things I would like to be doing other than fighting for my life and the future and my future in a room full of adults. And so I really want to make sure that people are paying attention to that and paying attention to the youth perspective.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Anya. That's Anya Wright, the youth member of the Maine Climate Council and a student at the College of the Atlantic. We'll go to Peter now, calling from York. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Hi. I've been in the energy business since the early 70s and helped start the New England Solar Energy Association. And we did an analysis at MIT over dinner once, and we said the problem is how to get rid of the oil furnace at home. And you folks have just said that there's about 75% oil furnaces in the state of Maine. And so later on, I started working on how to do that. And we had done it around the table with an analysis. So I put it into practice, and I put an addition on a place. I put in a 4-foot quartz heater, and it's super insulated. And about 3 years later, new owners came in, wanted room for a bureau, and they took out the quartz heater, and the addition still worked fine. So R70 in the roof, 50 in the walls, and about 30 in the basement exterior, and well drained underneath, and you can get rid of the furnace. So we don't take the furnace out. We leave the furnace there for emergencies in case of sickness, etc. So the Janet Mills has now got this problem of CMP running through the countryside, and it seems to me that you put a toll gate on that, and you charge them a very small amount of money since there's lots of energy going by from Canada to Massachusetts, and you give that money to the Efficiency Maine Trust, and we start insulating not the most expensive houses in the state, but we start insulating the poorest houses in the state and put a jacket around the outside. That's what you do.
Sure,
in the
Peter, and I think you're making a point that many others have made too, that focusing on the heat source isn't as important as focusing on getting your home well insulated. That if you can use less energy, no matter what type of energy it is, it's a great start.
I think that's right. I think energy efficiency is the first fuel, kind of the fuel that we don't use, right? How you can prioritize energy efficiency. 60% of our homes in Maine we're the most heating oil dependent state in the country, with 60% using heating oil, and you add propane, you get up over 70%. So the governor has a goal of 100,000 new heat pumps in Maine by 2025. Currently about 35,000 to 40,000 heat pumps. So a really rapid growth and transformation of heat pumps and electrifying.
So what about
sector.
A goal of having more houses with really great insulation?
I think that working with Efficiency Maine Trust, doing more on the residential side is something we'll be looking at. But I think the ensuring that, you know, the energy that you're using is as clean as possible is a part of that too.
Peter, thanks for your call. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling, with help from BCM Environmental and Land Law, announcing a merger with Thomas R. Hanna and Associates. Learn more at nhlandlaw.com. And Waterville Creates, inviting you to Variety, an evening of exceptional entertainment in support of the arts, on October 19th. WatervilleCreates.org.
Hello, I'm Jane Wales, host of World Affairs. 5 billion barrels of oil and gas have recently been discovered in Guyana. That's a poor South American nation. But resource discoveries don't always bring benefits to the populations or good governance. Next on World Affairs, we're joined by global development experts to discuss the resource curse and what Guyana can learn from the experience of other resource-rich nations.
That's coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio. Ken Burns' new documentary on country music continues tonight on Maine Public Television. Tonight's episode is Will the Circle Be Unbroken? And covers the years 1968 to 1972. Learn how country music responds to a nation divided by the Vietnam War as Army Captain turned songwriter Kris Kristofferson sets a new lyrical standard, and artists like Bob Dylan and the Byrds find a recording home in Nashville. That's Country Music, Ken Burns' latest documentary, tonight at 8 with a rebroadcast at 10 on Maine Public Television, and always available on demand on Passport.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the Maine Climate Council and what plans are in store for climate action. Joining me here in the Augusta studio, Jerry Reed, Commissioner of Maine's DEP, and Dan Burgess, Director of the State Energy Office. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Aaron calling from Bodenham. Hi, Aaron. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I love your show. Thank you. I'm glad you have so many scientists on the show today. I want to talk about hydropower and dams. There are a lot of dams in Maine, hydro or otherwise, and there are a lot of negative effects of dams. They cause low dissolved oxygen in the water. They rob sediment that should be coming down the rivers to protect the coast. They trap toxins such as mercury and dioxins upstream. They cause erosion. They create flood risks. And so the only reason that's been given for hydropower is that it is green.
It doesn't emit carbon, but it has other problems. Yeah. I want to turn to you, Jerry. You know, that's part of the problem with any energy source, right? I mean, there's nothing that has no impact.
Yeah, I guess I'd say a couple of things about that. One is that we at Maine DEP have an opportunity when these dams come up for federal relicensing to attach conditions to their operation to mitigate the effects that Aaron's describing. But I'd also say that not all hydropower is created equal, so that dams that are lower in the watershed at the headwaters of a major river that has a significant migratory fish run, for example, is going to have a much more significant environmental impact than a dam that's higher up in the watershed that has minimal or no effect on fish runs. So, you know, I wouldn't lump all hydro projects in together that way.
All right. Aaron, thanks for calling and adding that perspective. We're going to go to Robert Stoddard, who's calling from Portland. Robert, I understand you're also on the Maine Climate Council.
I am part of the Energy Working Group, advising the council on their work. Hello, Dan. Hello, Jerry.
Hey,
so there were two things. There were two things I wanted to respond to some earlier commenters. One was people asking about how the cost will get carried, and as Jerry alluded to, this is an update to a climate action plan that was done in 2004 under Governor Baldacci. And in that climate action plan, they were able to achieve the whole 20% reduction of emissions, which is less ambitious than ours goal now, without any net cost to the state. There were savings and upsides created through efficiency and other uses. So, you know, we shouldn't presume this is going to be hugely costly. And you know, many of the actions we hope to recommend will create benefits directly that help finance the projects. The second was, again, a concern that Maine alone is too small to have a meaningful impact. The 2004 plan really was a leadership position and did two important things. It helped energize the very important Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which is a East Coast-based carbon tax on generation fuels. And we also joined the California Vehicle Emission Standards Program, which, of course, is now under attack by the president, but has been a very successful program where I believe 14 states working together with California can, you know, help the auto industry set improved standards. So I hope as we look forward on the Climate Council's work and on the Energy Working Group, that we'll be looking for new ways of being leaders in the region and helping all of the New England states and New York to achieve an overall goal that will really have a meaningful impact.
Robert, thanks for calling in. Anything to add?
I think Robert raises a really good point of, you know, our air doesn't stop at the border, our oceans don't stop at the border, and working together collaboratively with our regional partners makes a lot of sense. And the governor, we may have said this, but we've joined the U.S. Climate Alliance, and we're now one of 25 states that have joined this bipartisan effort saying that we're going to meet the Paris Climate Accord, even though the federal government has pulled us out of that. That represents 55% of the U.S. population, so states coming together really can be impactful and meaningful.
All right, Robert, thank you so much. We have an email from Rocky. California recently mandated building codes that require all new construction have solar energy. This goes into effect in 2020 for new home construction. Can Maine consider some similar statewide changes to require solar energy for new home construction?
So there is a buildings working group that will be meeting on through the Maine Climate Council, and we're anticipating that they'll take up issues like this.
Okay. We'll go to Larry calling from Bangor. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi. As one of the people just said, the president is fighting everything. I'm wondering the wisdom of inviting Republicans. As a former Republican, I used to live in Miami, and at that time, the streets in Miami never flooded. Now they're flooding. Marco Rubio denies the existence of the climate problem. Susan Collins claims to be an environmentalist, yet she votes in every way at every turn against the environment, in particular with the EPA. So I wonder.
So, Larry, your question is why have Republicans on the Climate Council? Go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah, I think in Maine, happily, this issue is not as sharply partisan as it is in other parts of the country and in Washington, D.C. right now. And we want this to be a bipartisan effort, and we need it to be a bipartisan effort. Senator Woodsum, a very well-respected senator from York County, was the lead sponsor of the climate change bill this last session. And as Dan said, that bill and others passed with overwhelming support in the legislature from both parties. So it's really important for this to be a collaborative process and to have buy-in from all perspectives. And I think only that way will it be successful.
Thanks for your call, Larry. We have an email from Julie Ann Smith, who's executive director of the Maine Farm Bureau. She writes, Maine has lost a significant number of farms and farmland in the last 5 years. Much of this loss is due to the significant rise in the cost of production for crops and livestock. One cost-saving measure necessary for many farms, especially beginning farms, is utilizing used tractors and other machines that use fossil fuels. There is not currently renewable resource farm machinery that is commercially available, and it's unlikely that type of machinery would be affordable in the first few years of production. What consideration will be given to the high cost and lack of accessibility for farms that transition away from machinery that uses fossil fuels?
Yeah, so I think that's a perfectly valid point, and nothing about this effort is intended to kind of impose on people in those circumstances a set of solutions that don't work for them. So whatever you do for work, allowances would be made for you to continue with whatever you need in order to do your job efficiently. And until such time as more efficient farm equipment becomes available and affordable, you know, I don't see any change in that in the near future in Maine.
All right, we'll go to Jay calling from Damariscotta. Hi, Jay, go ahead.
Yeah, I signed the NOVA program back in the 70s when I was barely a teen and realized after becoming an adult that I was pretty much disappointed in progress and realized it was a systemic problem. And 10 years ago, I received approval for a patent for a part of a building design in trying to make everything easier to upgrade. And it seems to be that a lot of the change in the detail of the design that I came up with an estimated cost, I'm guessing, of about $10 million, was just more than anybody wanted to deal with as a, you know, as a startup type business. And since then, over the last year, I've tried to readapt this to more affordable personal type use for the patent, but just failing to find somebody like Bill Gates who can kind of understand a whole lot of different things and realize all the different advantages that I've got together. So
Jay, is your question about financing for financing or help for entrepreneurs who come up with ideas to help?
Mine right now is actually just to look, is to find somebody who has a real broad perspective on this that can understand it or who I can go talk to.
Happy to talk to him offline about opportunities that exist. I think we're excited about and interested in new technologies. You know, we look at things like battery energy storage. Those costs are coming down, are clearly going to be a big part of our energy future.
Jay, the voice you hear is Dan Burgess at the Governor's Energy Office, inviting you to give him a call. We'll try to squeeze in one or two more calls here. We'll go to Bede calling from Turner. Hi, Bede, if you can be quick, that'd be great.
Thank you. I'm calling to see if the council is looking at or would consider what are called the PACE and CPACE programs for the state of Maine. That's property assessed clean energy, where you can actually finance solar, for example, or any number of building envelope improvements while attaching those loans to the property itself, much like a mortgage.
We'll be looking at that. I would put that in the category of potential financing programs to incentivize energy efficiency and renewable energy, and it will be on the list, I'm sure, of things that will be considered.
Thanks, Bede. We'll move on to John, who's calling from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm bringing up the thing that I haven't heard mentioned about burning wood. And you know, you got a lot of trees in Maine and a lot of poor people, and they can't afford all this you know, affluent technology. And I think burning wood is, I don't think it's good for the situation, is it?
That's a great question, John. Go ahead.
Well, one of the challenges that the Climate Council is going to be focusing on is to make sure that low-income and elderly populations are not left behind in the effort. And that's why we made sure to have, for example, representation from AARP. And we're going to be focusing specifically on rural issues throughout this process. And one of them is obviously the burning of wood. So there's not a single answer to that question, but we're very conscious of the impact of what we're doing on the rural parts of the state and low-income populations.
John, thanks so much for your question. I'm going to squeeze in one more. Loretta in Biddeford, if you could be super quick, that'd be great.
I'll try to be. I've been listening to your program, and I heard something earlier that just stunned me, the fact that you're not trying to be a politico, and you are, by not inviting people from the Green Party. Where all of this started, going back to Jonathan Carter and people that were interested in preserving our Maine environment. So I'm wondering why you keep saying bipartisan. It just means two parties. It doesn't mean that you're including everybody. But thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you. Thanks, Loretta.
So the representation on the council is set forth in statute, and the statute specifies that there will be representatives from the two major political parties in the state. There may very well be a Green Party member on the council. It's just not that there's a designated seat for somebody from the Green Party.
Okay, so there's a good chance that one of the other 36 members representing business or environmental organizations may. You're not asking their political affiliation when you're inviting them onto the.
Exactly right.
All right. Loretta, thanks so much for calling. And we have about 30 seconds. I'll try to get Terry's question in. Since geography determines energy requirements, can the council comment on how it will use geographic information systems to manage climate change?
I think we're going to be looking to utilize all the scientific and technical information available to us. We have a scientific working group that is going to be supporting the entire Climate Council, and technologies like that will be a part of what we're utilizing.
All right. Well, obviously something people in our audience care a great deal about. Lots of questions on this hour. Thank you both for being here. The voice you just heard, Dan Burgess, executive branch member of the Climate Council. He heads the state's energy office. And Jerry Reed, co-chair of the Maine Climate Council and commissioner of Maine's Department of Environmental Protection. Nikki Shields ran the board today with additional help from Scott McCollum. You can find past editions of Maine Calling and a lot more at mainecalling.org. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.